911, what's your emergency?
What is the address of your emergency?
911.
911, what's the nature of your emergency?
911, what is your emergency?
Police department.
May 8th. A black Yale student naps in a dorm common area, and a white student calls the police.
You got your ID on you?
Yeah, I do.
All right, can we see that?
Why?
We got a police call for you.
We need to make sure that you belong here.
Okay, let me open my apartment for you so that you can see that I belong here.
April 30th. A parent calls campus police at Colorado State University when two Native American prospective students join a tour group. She said she found them suspicious.
What's in there? Is there anything in here? Just your money?
There's a magnet in there.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay, so the reason we stopped you is talk to you. Somebody from the group called, said that you guys just kind of came into the group.
Yeah, we were late.
Also April 30th, a woman calls the police on a group of people she describes as burglars. They were three black women checking out of an Airbnb.
There's like three black people stealing stuff.
Stealing stuff?
Yeah. Like breaking into the house and taking
people. No, we're taking our suitcases out of the house.
Right. They said like luggage and stuff.
Because there's three black people in the neighborhood, of course.
April 21st. Five black women go golfing, and when they don't golf fast enough, a group of white male golfers calls the police on them to make them leave.
It's 1:28. You got off the green at not 12:45.
And so they're saying they want to kick us off the hole.
Let the police handle.
And this is former Commissioner Steve Cronister.
Congratulations. You're a real winner.
April 12th. Two black men sit in a Starbucks waiting for a friend. Staff ask them to leave, and when they don't, staff member calls the police, and the men are handcuffed and arrested.
What did they get called for? Because there are two black guys sitting here meeting me?
Yes, I did.
Well, what did they do? What did they do? Someone told me they did.
They didn't do anything. I saw the entire thing.
They
didn't.
What did they do?
And on and on and on. Americans calling the police to report other Americans of color, even where there's been no crime. I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. So what makes you pick up the phone to dial 911? Is it witnessing a crime? Is it some sort of suspicion of shady activity? How you answer that question may depend on the color of your skin and on the color of the skin of the person you fear is up to no good. The examples are flooding our social media feeds. They're just piling up. So what do we do? Where do we go from here? Jason Johnson is politics editor at TheRoot.com, and he's also a professor at Morgan State University in Baltimore. Jason, hello.
Glad to be here.
Why are people picking up the phone and calling 911?
They're racist. I mean, that's the most basic answer. But I think an even more important question is, why are we seeing it now, right? And the easy answer is to say, oh, well, it's social media, it's technology, et cetera, et cetera. But that's not why, right? We've always had these kinds of problems. What's happened is there has been a shift in this country. There are large numbers of white Americans who are now empathetic to this kind of daily harassment by people of color, which is making media outlets interested in bringing that story to the public.
Now, let's dig a little deeper into the sort of the reasons behind some of these calls. Mm-hmm. A lot of them are surrounding suspicion or I'm scared. I felt, quote unquote, uncomfortable. What does this have to do with white Americans who are largely the ones behind these calls? I mean, I can't say every single one has been by a white person, but largely what we're seeing. What does this tell us about this idea of discomfort in America?
The majority population in America often believes that they are the owners of any and all spaces in which they're in. And when other people are there, it is at their sort of benevolence. I go to this Starbucks as a white person, and I like being around other white people, and the blacks and the Hispanics and the Asians and the LGBT people who are there because they make me feel good about myself that I'm in such a diverse environment. But the moment that the existence of these other people is uncomfortable or isn't what they want or what they expect in the environment, they believe that they can basically use the police as their own racism valets to remove any people of color that make them uncomfortable. So most of this behavior, it doesn't matter whether it's conscious or whether it's unconscious. It's the belief that I can control who is in my space and I can come up with any justification that I want. And if you think about it, would a man be able to call the police and say, hey, there's a woman walking around this basketball court. She's making me uncomfortable. No, the police would never show up for that reason. If a woman said, hey, there's a man walking around the bathroom, I feel uncomfortable. The police wouldn't show up unless he did something. But someone saying there's a person of color nearby automatically is considered valid by the police departments in this country, by campus cops in this country, and they feel compelled to go and pursue whatever sort of bias or racist agenda this person has.
And, so and that's I want to talk about the campus element specifically, right? Because we've seen Starbucks, we saw golf course. But we are also seeing this happening in universities.
I can say this as somebody who went to the University of Virginia undergrad and went to Chapel Hill to get my PhD. And I cannot tell you the number of times that I was not allowed into a building, that I was, you know, that someone let three people in and then looked at me and was like, I need to see your student ID, or pretended that I wasn't standing outside the library with my student ID trying to get in there. The problem on college campuses is it lays bare any of the pre-existing notions about threat or danger, because you're on a campus and 90% of the people on your campus are supposed to be there.
Are these callers, in your opinion, actually concerned about the harm that could result out of this, which goes far beyond harassment?
No, no, they don't care at all. And in fact, oftentimes the reason that they're calling is because they do want to inflict harm. The call itself is a threat. This is a piece I wrote a couple of weeks ago on The Root. You know, we need to talk about why white people keep calling the police on black people. And it's this idea of basically saying, I can't hit you, I can't use violence against you, but I can sanction state violence against you based on nothing other than the fact that I'm a white person. Because you look at the situation in Oakland, right? We have people barbecuing.
I hear you have a problem with these gentlemen having a barbecue here at the lake. What's going on?
Now she don't want to talk.
She doesn't want to talk now.
It's illegal to have a charcoal grill in the park here.
Now, first and foremost, what right does this woman have to determine who can and cannot barbecue? Right? It's not like they're talking on the quiet car or something where you can say it's a universal problem. These people are barbecuing. Not only did she feel the right to command where these people were, she also called the police, not because she was concerned, but because she wanted to threaten them.
The police did come.
Yes, the police came.
And what was the result of that?
So here's what's interesting. The result of that is the police, and this is why I think it's really important to talk about not just the callers, but the police themselves, right? There was a white woman who saw this other white woman making the call, and she's like, look, I'm going to stay here as a witness. And she stayed for almost 2 hours with the black family, sitting around socializing everything, because she recognized that when it came to the authority that the police would listen to, because she was a white woman, they would listen to her against this other white woman. And what happened? When the police arrived, they asked the caller questions, they asked the other white woman, they determined that there was nothing going on, and they left. No arrests, no tickets, nothing was handed out. This is the other part of this that I think we also have to talk about, even as we're talking about the people making these calls and the consequences they should face. It's this idea that police have a tremendous amount of agency when they reach a scene. Watch any episode of Cops. Okay, 90% of the time when cops are called to a situation, it's not worth their time. They show up and say, no, ma'am, you can't call the police because your husband hid the remote, right? So the fact that the police often show up in these situations when they're called on a person of color, they're basically given free rein to engage in the kind of violence they want to engage in anyway, because in most of these situations, if they had simply asked questions of both the caller and someone else involved, nothing would have happened. Starbucks, had the cops shown up and asked the store manager, what's your complaint? And she had been forced to explain what happened. And then they went and asked the young men, what's going on here? They'd have just left.
But those young men, okay, so much to unpack here. You mentioned the white woman who sat with the family and waited for the cops to show up at the barbecue. In Starbucks, we saw a similar thing. We saw white people say, well, wait a minute, I'm filming this. Nothing happened. What are you guys doing? But in that instance, the men were still taken out and handcuffed.
Right.
And my question to you is, what is the responsibility, if any, of passersby in these instances? Like, can and should people who see something like this happening intervene, whether it's effective or not, to say, look, I saw this entire thing play out and nothing happened?
Well, this is key. It's always good to be a witness, right? It's always good to be there and tell your story. But ultimately, the responsibility is not theirs. Ultimately, the responsibility is on the police, and ultimately, the responsibility is on local politicians and elected officials, county prosecutors, state prosecutors, city council. I have said this all along. The best way to solve this problem is to create consequences for this kind of behavior. This is malicious prosecution. That's all there is to it. If I pull a fire alarm and there's no fire, I get fined. If you call the police for malicious prosecution, for an absolute non-crime, the police should be able to say, you know what, $250 ticket. You wasted our time and you wasted the taxpayers' money because this guy was moving out of an Airbnb.
We asked our listeners about this topic, and I'd like to play you some calls.
This is Arius from Dallas, Texas. And this is not news. This is just news to white America. When it comes to overzealous, bigoted, and biased, quote-unquote, good Samaritans, they think they're helping, but they're not. And you couple that with overzealous, bigoted police officers, and that leaves a very large gray area for black and brown people that we've operated in for a very long time.
My name is Kate. I'm calling from Harrisonburg, Virginia. I'll never call the police for a person of color in need without their express wishes. Police just aren't safe for people of color, especially black people. Because I'm tall and white, I use those two privileges to witness and video police interactions with black and non-black people of color. I don't think that any white people should be calling the police when they suspect, quote, air quotes, people of color of wrongdoing, especially those who are gentrifying neighborhoods. They need to learn their place.
She is expressing the kind of humanitarian community activism that everybody should engage in, right? If we didn't call the police as much as we do, if we actually learned how to have civil discourse with disagreements, then we would solve a lot of problems that we have in the community anyway. And as everyone always argues, the cops have plenty of stuff that they really need to be working on, not just, you know, because you spied somebody walking across the street. But she also says something else about using her privilege to combat these kinds of issues. I think it's important that people use their privilege. I think it's important that people use whatever kind of resources they do to make this a fairer and more decent world. But you got to vote. It has to be a larger structural response, because the idea of individual responses to systematic oppression won't work.
I want to ask you also about what this tells us about fear in the United States. I feel like just we talked a little bit about, I guess, what people would call, quote unquote, white fragility. But this is a bigger issue of fear.
Yeah.
This fear that we have of each other, this fear of the narrative that I think we've been hearing, particularly over the past year and a half, of this sort of brown menace of Americans who aren't white. I mean, can we get past this, or are we just going to see this type of fear of each other getting worse?
No, I mean, this is pretty standard. And even those individuals who make these calls to say, oh, my gosh, I had no idea what was going on. You knew that there was a possibility. That's why you made the phone call to begin with. But also people who are actively and intentionally and maliciously calling the police for that reason. And I've had that happen. I had a disagreement about a charge at a Red Roof Inn hotel when I was like driving through Pennsylvania several years ago. And I said, look, this is not the charge. This is the receipt, et cetera, et cetera. And the woman's immediate response is, I'll call the police. I'll tell them you're getting belligerent. That's a threat. It was a death threat. I mean, literally, we're talking about $25 on a bill. And she threatened to call the police because I said I wanted to speak to a manager. So, you know, again, there are people who have always been this way, and then we have a contingent of Americans who have been emboldened by this behavior because they know nothing's going to happen to them.
You mentioned your piece in theroot.com. I will be tweeting that out, and hopefully we'll have that available on our website. Jason Johnson is a professor in the School of Global Journalism and Communication at Morgan State University in Baltimore and politics editor at theroot.com. Jason, thank you.
Thank you. Anytime.
I'm Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, our team has been reporting high-quality news about science, technology, and medicine. News you won't get anywhere else. And now that political news is 24/7, our audience is turning to us to know about the really important stuff in their lives. Cancer, climate change, genetic engineering, childhood diseases. Our sponsors know the value of science and health news. For more sponsorship information, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.